The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 489, recorded on January 8th, 2018. Welcome to the 489th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 322nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durr.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So we're into the second week of 2018. Nothing's much going on, at least video game wise. But what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Divinity Original Sin 2 that I got for Christmas, and I'm enjoying it very much.
I've been hearing a lot of good things about it because, from my understanding, Divinity is the sort of game in which you can say, I wonder if I can do that. Oh, I can do that.
There is a lot more interactivity with the environment, I think, than in the previous game.
I heard from another podcast that when he was fighting this character, he accidentally healed that character that he was fighting, and it wiped the mat with him, and he had realized that you can cast spells on anybody, and you have to be careful that you're not casting the wrong spell on the wrong person.
Yes.
Especially since healing spells can wound the undead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's the character named Fane, who's an undead, and you have to use poison to heal them, and you can't use healing spells on them because it kills or hurts them.
And you can also have them walk through poison too to heal them.
the elves in this game have some interesting abilities. They seem to be cannibals, so that you can get an ability where they could just stand in a pool of blood and heal themselves, or eat body parts and they get memories of that person that they ate. So it's kind of a little bit macabre there, but an interesting take on them. And like I said, it got more detailed with the environment, because in the beginning of the game, you're on this ship, and when a storm happens, water pours in from the sides and creates water on the ground and gets you wet, and so you can cast electrical or ice lightning spells on the water for effect. Or damaging enemies. It's definitely a challenging game. Yet there's a lot of strategy and tactics in the battles. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of area effect spells, so you could hit the wrong target if you're not careful how you're aiming.
It reminds me of the old AD&D gold box games. You got to be very careful where you cast that fireball.
Yes, you don't want to incinerate the whole party, which is very easy to do. I'm enjoying the story because you are a source, a person that basically has this. I'm not totally sure I understand it, but basically you have this ability to, I guess, to use the true source of magic, but it's like so unstable. It's like wild magic, and these void woken show up anytime you use that magic. So, anybody that has that source is then, taken in prisoner in custody, and they try to cure them and stop them from using it because it's very dangerous magic. It could
sort of like blood magic in Dragon Age.
Yeah, I think that's something like what's going on. So it's a very interesting game. I'm enjoying it.
The thing about this that we have to remember is that this is developed by Larian, and Larian resurrected its games by going to Kickstarter. And now they make games that have no editorial mandates. No one tells them what to do, and they know their fan base. So they make games the way they want to make it, and they don't care about the demographics because basically the games were already paid for. And more people buy it, then fine, but they already have their games paid for.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. It's really helped to lend to this whole isometric renaissance of just having so many different games of this genre. It's really cool to have yet another one to play, and this one gets very creative with its lore and world, so it makes it a different one.
We always have these horror stories about Kickstarter projects that are botched or go bad, but this represents the best of what Kickstarter projects can do, you know?
Yes.
And the thing is that before this came out, I think there was people noticed mild interest in the Baldur's Gate remasters, but it wasn't until these Kickstarter projects came out, like Pillars of Eternity and Wasteland 2, that they found, wait a minute, these types of RPGs people really want to play, you know? People didn't know they still wanted space simulators until there was crowdfunding. And of course we have games like Star Citizen, you know, and Elite Dangerous, which people seem to forget, well, I believe started as a Kickstarter project.
It makes me wonder, how were they deciding who wanted to play what games in the past then, if they weren't polling the people somehow?
Because publishers see people buying stuff and don't seem to understand, and they go, like, there was a time when every other game was a real-time strategy game. There was a time every other game was a first-person shooter. There was a time when every other game was a JRPG, you know? And they go into these things in which they think, well, everybody wants to play this type of game, which means no one else wants to play that kind of game, so let's not put any resources into it. You know, there was a time, remember, there were no adventure games whatsoever. And in the late 90s, it is going to be hard to believe, but there were almost no RPGs. There was one RPG that came out in 1998 of any note, and that was Diablo. And then in 2000, Diablo 2 came out, and it was like an explosion. And oh, wait. And RPGs didn't really kick off again until Microsoft started getting Bioware to do stuff like Knights of the Old Republic and stuff like that. And all of a sudden it was, yeah, Western RPGs are back. Because there was always JRPGs.
Well, yeah, I was going to mention Suikoden, but that's a JRPG.
I mean, yes. Because Japan was making games for themselves. And I said, oh, if they want to try it, okay. I think that's why a lot of people have gotten hooked on JRPGs, because there were no RPGs to play except for JRPGs. You know, they wanted to play an RPG, and all they could play was, oh, there's Final Fantasy. Okay, fine.
Yeah, and there was the Dragon Warrior series, but not as popular as Final Fantasy.
No, what I'm saying is that if you wanted to play a JRPG, you know, you had to go to Star Ocean or stuff like that.
Right. That's true.
Have you played any of the Divinity games there, TJ?
I have not, but I did a lot of mod work on them.
You don't play it, just make mods for it.
I sift through other people's mods and I bring them together, and I brought them together for one of my publishers. And so I would spend like hours on end sifting through what had been created on Steam and seeing what people thought of those things and trying to bring the best of the best together.
I was doing the same thing on Game Watcher. It's like, Jamie, find us some mods. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to go through all of... Oh, geez. What was the one I always had to go to because it was the most popular? Not Skyrim, although they had some...
Farm Simulator?
No. It was Just Cause mods that everybody wanted for a long time.
But one of the things that's always been super awesome to me about that game is the DM mode, the Dungeon Master mode, where it literally just gives you a toolbox and you create your own quest full of text, full of scenarios, full of monsters to kill.
You're making me very sad for Neverwinter Nights, which could have been the ultimate DM game, but they screwed it up.
Well, that's okay, because now Divinity 2 exists.
This is true.
But I see that stuff, and I've seen all the new toolkits that people have made mods for that game, and I've seen what people put together with that.
Now you're making me think of Adventure Construction Set. Now, you ever play Adventure Construction Set? It may be before your time. It was when EA was the most innovative publisher out there, and they were doing their album cover games.
EA innovative?
I'm going to tell you something. I would give my left nut for a remake of Mail Order Monsters.
That's a TMI,
Mail Order,
but okay.
Mail Order Monsters, Pinball Construction Set, Adventure Construction Set, Racing Destruction Set, Night of the... what was it? Mirror of the Lamps? Something like that. Archon. That's a game... You know, actually, I think they did a remake of Archon recently. But Archon was the best. I would play that for hours. It was a battle chess before battle chess. And actual battles. The Unicorn was my favorite unit.
Cool.
Did you ever play Archon?
Not I.
You see, youngsters, you had so much that you I feel like you're deprived because you never played games like Archon. Fortunately, they Firaxis made a remake of XCOM, so you don't have to miss out on that.
Yeah, I actually played the original XCOM, I played Terror of the Deep. Okay. So
I'm going to tell you something. You know, thank God for actual mouse support, because the user interface in the original XCOM was just bad.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's one of the many reasons that game was stupid hard.
Yeah, I mean, when the interface is part of the difficulty, then that's not. Also, you know, your soldiers were basically cannon fodder for the most part. You know, mm-hmm. you don't care for them like you do in the reboot. No, they were like, okay, go there. If you level up, great. Well, we know what's going to happen. You're going to get your face eaten off.
It's a pretty somber thing, though, because it doesn't have that graphic where, like, there's literally a hill and there's graves of all your soldiers all over it.
Yeah, but the thing is that hill becomes a mountain pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you been playing anything else aside from that? I mean, you're pretty sure you've been playing Minecraft.
Oh, yeah, Minecraft, and like I said, I finished Quern, and I finished South Park Factory Butthole.
Oh, you finished it?
Oh, yeah. I finished that game. It was, like I said, it was challenging, but a lot of fun, and we just powered through it because my wife and I were enjoying the story so much.
Yeah.
So we definitely finished that. And I...
By the way, you never talked about playing the Minecraft Story Mode Season 2 finale.
Yeah, I did finish that, and I enjoyed it. I liked how it ended, and it gave you choices on how to end the story. Right even to the last minute, or the last second, you had a choice of what you wanted your character to do, you know, how you wanted the story to end.
Well, you know what that means, don't you?
They're probably
they're setting up for season 3. Yeah.
I would like that. That would be very nice. Definitely would be interested in that.
Well, here's the thing. It's Telltale and it's Microsoft working together. I'm pretty sure they're going to get a Season 3. I mean, it's not...
Yeah,
here's the thing. They're fighting... Microsoft's fighting game... I was about to say Altered Beast.
Wow.
No, anyways, but that isn't nearly as popular as the Minecraft Story Mode, and it's getting its seasons as well.
Well, that is excellent. Because that'll be interesting, because... The way it ended, you can choose to go adventuring or stay in your city. So that seems like that would be a very different start. If you went to a season 3, you'd be either out, you know, adventuring, or you'd be at your city building doing whatever.
Well, you just decide what you have in your place. I mean, if you go out adventuring, you might have more, you know, artifacts. But if you stay in the city, you might probably be selling things and you have more money or something like that.
Yeah, something along those lines.
But
it'll be interesting to see what they do.
So let me ask you a question. Has Minecraft Story Mode, because I remember you were sort of like, you liked it, but you were sort of meh on in this first season. It seems like you think Season 2 has been a lot better.
It is better. Like I said, they allowed you to build things, actually, you know, build whatever you want.
I allowed you to play Minecraft.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you get to place the blocks. Because I know I was saying how... Dragon Quest Builder, you build whatever you want. You can build the room whichever way you feel like, and the game just says, okay. And in here, and in the Season 2, you are allowed to build things. It's mostly decorative stuff, you know, build me a statue of whatever, and the game says, okay, that's awesome, and moves on. So I hope they take that another step and allow you more building opportunities, because I think that's really part of Minecraft is building stuff and not just the story. The story's great. I'm enjoying that. But I really hope they go more into the building and allowing, and even maybe building solutions, like how to get you over here, and you have to find the right materials to use to solve a building puzzle, for instance. That would be really good.
Yeah. What have you been playing, DJ?
So lately I've been... mostly playing League of Legends. I've been working my new job, and I'm on my PC a lot more. So when I have some downtime, I bust into a League of Legends game.
You know, that reminds me. this past weekend, the guys at Rebel FM started talking about how they're really getting into Rainbow Six Siege now, because the first few months they were really down on it, and now the 2 years later they've come around on it because of all the changes that have been made in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say that it's like a 100% different game from when it started. Like it's not the World of Warcraft
Cataclysm
to the original World of Warcraft, but it has improved to the point where with so many operators, so many maps, and just like all this different stuff that you can do with the game, it's vastly improved over where it was when it started.
You know, people like to talk a lot of shit about Ubisoft, but in the case of Rainbow Six Siege, it seems like Ubisoft gave the developer permission to just keep updating it and interact with the fans and all that stuff, because it seems to me like Rainbow Six Siege has the closest relationship to its fans of any esport wannabes.
Ubisoft just recently gave away Assassin's Creed Black Flag during fall-winter sales, so that was actually nice.
I didn't care, I already owned it.
I didn't own it, so now I do, because it's free.
Well, here's the thing. You know what Assassin's Creed Black Flag really is, right?
Yes, I know.
It's Assassin's
times.
Creed pretending to be Zelda Wind Waker.
Right.
All the Assassin's Creed stuff in that game sucks. The only thing that's good is when you're on your boat.
Yeah, and I would have to agree with you. I would have to agree with you, Jonah. It seems like I think it's Ubisoft Montpellier that handles Rainbow Six Siege mostly, and those guys seem to just have sort of free reign to handle all of their stuff, because over the course of the time since the game has launched, they've built up the game. They've also launched a very good esports scene, and they've also built an awesome community around it.
Well, I think that's the biggest reason why Ubisoft is giving them free reign, is because they want a piece of that esports pie.
Yeah, most certainly. So, like, I wouldn't say that they have like free reign to do whatever they want, but I feel like at this point they have a little bit less leash on them when it comes to their decisions about their games as opposed to anyone else.
But you know what I would really like? I would really like a single-player-only Rainbow Six. It's about time.
Yeah, they. I think the problem people had with that is the same problem a lot of people have with Punisher nowadays, is that whenever they were doing Rainbow Six Siege Rainbow Six games, they were kind of going for like the most topical, the most controversial sort of military playground thing that they could come up with, and the last time they tried to do it, they went straight into domestic terrorism, and they went deep into it before it finally got canceled.
Yeah, that was the one with that scene on the bridge. It was all about the 1%.
And I really do think it's like I really do think it's kind of the same situation as the Punisher, where like people ask sometimes, like, do we really need that character right now in this particular time and place?
You know, this is going to be way off what we were talking about, but I was thinking about, now you both still play Skyrim, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. What do you think, and this is a game we've not discussed at all, what do you think of Kingdom Come Deliverance? Because basically what that is, it's Skyrim with all the fantasy taken out. It takes place in medieval age, but it's still Skyrim with real that's grounded in reality.
I think it sounds neat. I think it sounds like the Holy Roman Empire,
just so you know.
Yeah, I think it looks and sounds like a more immersive version of Mountain Blade, which I loved Mountain Blade.
Well, the thing about Mountain Blade is that the graphics were just bad. They were bad for 10 years ago.
Yeah, but it was still such a good game that a lot of people were able to overlook that for a long time.
I couldn't.
So why do you feel this has anything to be like Skyrim if it's no
because
magic,
it's an
no
open
dragon.
World RPG in the very in the exact same way that Skyrim is.
Mm-hmm.
Except you, but you're not fighting dragons and orcs and trolls, you're fighting other people.
Right.
Yeah, and you build up skills through using various doing various actions.
Yeah, and it's and, also it also has a bit of the tactical combat you'd find in a Dark Souls game, or at least I guess in this case For Honor. If we're gonna go
oh,
there.
Oh yeah, Dark Souls, that's another game I'm playing now.
What?
Very
really? Which one?
What are you playing?
Dark Souls 3. Dark Souls 3.
Oh, okay. Dark
what
Souls
do you think
3,
so far?
the weird offshoot of Dark Souls 1 and 2. Dark Souls 3 is the one that takes a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. And I'm not saying it doesn't work, it just has that Frankenstein feel to it.
Mm-hmm. It also has a little bit of Bloodborne in it. But what do you think? Yeah. What do you think so far, Scott?
It's a very challenging game because in the first 5 minutes you're facing a boss, and yep. If you want to get to the rest of the game, you have to defeat this boss. And there's, right. there's very little build up, very little else you can do. It's like this is how hard this game is going to be, and if you don't, if you can't handle this boss, and if it's too much, then this game isn't for you, kind of thing.
Well, it's more like it's going to train you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's training you to realize how tough it is and how the mindset you need going into this, because this isn't just an easy hack and slash. This is like strategy. You have to plan your moves. You have to use your abilities smartly. It's not just wildly.
And sometimes all of that isn't even enough. Sometimes you just got to die and then remember what happened.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that, like I said, Kingdom Come Deliverance isn't on the Dark Souls level. It's more on the For Honor level.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's not. It's coming out February.
Dark Souls is basically you keep hitting your head against a stone wall because it feels so good when you stop.
Dark Souls trains you to know that Dark Souls hates you.
Yeah. And it's really nice when other people leave messages for you, like little warnings. I walked up to a mark and said, "Look behind you." And I looked behind me and there was a monster that I didn't even see. Yeah. And it was about to attack, but I would. You know, it before it got me. So it there's some nice clues in there.
Ask you a question.
There is one.
TJ, did you play Demon's Souls?
I did not.
Okay, no. Because that was the predecessor to Dark Souls.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Actually, I played it for like 2 seconds way back when it came out, but I played like up to the first boss and I never got anywhere.
Well, here's the thing. Demon's Souls is unfair. Dark Souls is fair.
How do you figure?
Here's the thing. Demon's Souls just had rando death, you know. But Dark Souls, when you die, you know why you died.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like...
That's true-ish.
I mean, well, here's the thing. Now, you may get surprised by it because you don't know the boss's pattern yet. But after you sort of get what the boss is trying to do, then you say, oh, okay, that's why I died. Oh, because I didn't do this. Oh, I didn't do that. You know, that's the same thing with Cuphead. You know, Cuphead is tough, but at least you know why you died.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I kind of hate the comparison of Cuphead to Dark Souls because...
Well, they're not the same game, but they are the same type of game. You know what they are? They're arcade games. Well, no, arcade games are just randomly killed you because, fuck you, we don't care about you.
Cuphead... is bite-sized. Cuphead is very bite-sized to the point where it's manageable to deal with all that death.
You know, I learned about that Rainbow Six Siege is also bite-sized as well. Those missions go very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually good. I mean, the one thing about League of Legends and Dota and other shooters is that you could spend 30 minutes and you lose and you felt like you wasted your time. At least if you lose in Rainbow Six Siege, that's it. You lose. Okay, go back in there.
The only, like, the shortest a League of Legends match will ever be is 15 minutes, and that's if one team is really hammering the crap out of another team so hard that they just break the other team's spirit.
Oh, please, I've heard of hour-long Dota matches.
The average is about 30 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, I couldn't put that much investment in a competitive game.
I have fun with it.
Okay, that's a lie because I do put up with it with Halo 5 multiplayer if I play it. That's only because you're right back in there, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've always just liked that that personal strategy aspect of games like League of Legends. That's why I go back to it, is that I like exploring the champions and what they can do. Right now I'm fiddling around with this one, Tahm Kench, who is basically a giant anthropomorphic catfish. And he has some nifty little attacks where he could, if he hits someone three times, he can swallow them up and carry them around with him for a second. And I know, there's just like something interesting every time I go back there that makes me want to keep exploring those characters. I like the characters. Warm,
friendly player base.
Yeah. I had somebody get mad at me for playing Tahm Kench today. Like, actually get mad at me for picking that champion.
Because he wanted
and going,
to? Because you did what he wanted to? Or was it just...
No, because he was on the other team.
Sort of thing. It's like, oh, you're playing the easy one to play.
No, he was on the other team, and he hated that I picked Tahm Kench and was abusing my champion to beat him. And I'm like, you mean, like, using the stuff that my champion can do because I want to win the match? Huh. It was a bizarre thing for somebody to get mad at me about, but that's League of Legends community for you.
Why do you want to play with those people? I don't understand, TJ.
I don't want to play with those people, but I do want to explore those champions because they're cool, and I really want to see what they can do. That's what keeps me in there.
Are there, like, private servers or just, I don't know, non-hostile people to play with?
So you can play bot matches. You can play a training match where you set where like it's you and however many people you want to bring along, and you can set the enemy and team up to be just entirely bots. Or you can go and do a game where I gotta say I play ranked all the time, and in ranked everybody's angry because they're not rising up the ladder. I don't care as much, but other people really do.
Okay, I was just.
But unranked is much more chill, and then there are bot matches that are just like completely chill.
You know, at least in Halo 5, you can mute everybody and not have to and not lose anything out of it. I mean, there's a lot more communication that's necessary for MOBAs.
Yeah, and I mean the reason why I play ranked in particular is because I like the feeling of progression and knowing that I'm getting better with a character. I might lose sometimes, and in fact, I lose. I'm about a 50-50 win rate, like where I have about 400 wins and 400 losses. And I don't know, it's just fun. It's fun to me to explore
that game 800 times.
I know, right? You'd think I'd learn by now.
Well, it's important that you're having fun. If that's all that matters, if you're having fun.
I heard that one fan base that's getting really caustic is the Overwatch fan base.
Specifically, again, in the ranked play, people get really mad when there's progression that depends on them winning.
There was this YouTube video about this guy who used to be one of the they were that guy, you know, the loud, abusive, what's it called, and they learned to cut it out because they realized that there was they were sublimating all their issues and blah 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 blah. And it's sort of like they're now looking at the other players with this knowledge because they used to be one, you know. So.
Yeah, I guess an asshole would really, really know how to get in the minds of another asshole. Yeah.
That's
but,
true.
Or get
one to know one.
So, what I've been playing, I tried Assassin's Creed Origins, and my opinion is it fucking sucks. It sucks so bad it's not even funny. It's gorgeous. It's one of the most gorgeous games I've ever played because Xbox One X, 4K TV, you know, it's enhanced. But here's the thing about Assassin's Creed. It shouldn't be sluggish and slow. You shouldn't have to hold down a button to take out a person secretly. Because, you know, I've played games like Batman Arkham Asylum now and other games in which you're sneaking in the grass and you're ambushing them, like Shadow of War. And Assassin's Creed feels like you're playing with feet made of cement. It's just bad. The sluggish control. I could not stand it. I played for like 3 hours and then I sent it back.
So you didn't even try that exploration mode where it's all peaceful?
No. Because it wasn't fun. And they stripped it. It's just, I see what they're trying to go for with some of the things too, but I'd rather have the old map than having your bird look for stuff. It's just, it just made me want to give it a noogie and then a wet willy, then dump its books. You know, it wanted me to, it made me feel like I wanted to be a school bully against it. It was just that annoying. So I dumped it. What I did buy is I bought the BioShock collection for $20 online. So I played through BioShock again. And playing it again, it made me realize how much it wanted to be System Shock 2. Andrew Ryan as Xerxes, and Frank Fontaine as Shodan. And when you're playing BioShock 2, Sophia Lamb is the body of the many. And when I was playing it, I was thinking, Jesus Christ, every single beat of System Shock 2 is in BioShock. I'm playing System Shock 2. It was that much more. I know I knew that it shared a lot of stuff with System Shock 2 because, you know, it was made by Looking Glass employees. But when I played it again, it's sort of like, oh my God, they completely and utterly ripped off everything from System Shock 2. Everything. Not that it makes it a bad game, but it just makes it an odd experience. Which makes, you know, hacking, it's sort of like, yeah, there's hacking in this because there was hacking in System Shock 2. And then I was thinking, you know how much better this would have been had it been a science fiction game? Imagine BioShock set in the present day, more like Soma, you know? So,
Soma is terrifying.
But here's the other thing is that I was also missed two achievements that I swore I should have gotten. Sister Savior, in which you dealt with every single little sister. I didn't get the achievement. I must have somehow forgotten one.
Oh dear.
And I didn't get Historian, which is a pain in the ass. And I'm pretty sure I did get every audio diary. I'm probably going to play it again in a couple of weeks on Ultra Easy, because, you know, they don't care about difficulty mode with those achievements. So I'm midway through BioShock 2, and again, we discussed this like a few weeks ago, I don't understand why people dump on it. It's a better game than BioShock. The action is better, the all the mechanics are better, it plays better, it looks better. The story is good. I don't understand the bitching about it. And I think it's all because it had a multiplayer mode, and that's all people focused on.
BioShock 2, I think people felt overpowered by the fact that they were a Big Daddy, but at the same time...
Well, here's the thing. I survived a lot longer as Jack than I did as a Big... My Big Daddy gets pimp-slapped by everybody, even splicers. I don't feel powerful.
I think there's that sense. Too. I think there's that sense for a lot of people that you felt less vulnerability as a Big Daddy than you did as Jack or Booker DeWitt.
Well, when you were a Big Daddy as Jack in the first game, then you were powerful. In this, no, he's Subject Delta is a weakling. No wonder they had to upgrade the Big Daddies. And I got the achievement for being able to beat a little sister without dying.
So, oh, yeah. You mean a big sister.
A big sister, right.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward
too.
To the part of the game, and spoiler alert for a game that's 7 years old, I'm looking forward to the part in which you become a little sister and you see the world through a little sister's eyes. That, to me, is the best moment in any of the games. 1, 2, or Infinite. I love that.
I will say this. When you finally get to that part where you save the girl and you gain the plasmid that allows you to summon her, absolutely. Yeah, but the moment when you can summon her into combat is absolutely awesome.
The first time I played it, I never used that plasmid. I never needed Big Sister's help. I just said, because at that point, I was just rocking everything. Everything was a piece of cake. You know,
I didn't do it. I didn't use it because I had to. I used it because I wanted to.
Here's the thing. You know what the best plasmid in the entire game is? the decoy plasmid. Because everybody goes after your decoy plasmid, and it's you're just sitting back there saying, guess what? It's like that moment in Total Recall. It's a hologram! Surprise! Blam, 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 blam. I mean, beating Fontaine in the last mode in the first game is easy because all I do is keep on summoning that ghost of myself while laying all these traps. You know, and it's funny, everybody's fooled by that hologram. And it's funny, too. Because they start screaming at the hologram. You're worthless! Everybody loves the Grand Dame Splicer. She's hilarious. Anyways, the next game I'm getting, next game I'm renting, which is on its way, is Okami. So I'll be able to tell you what I think of that game, which everybody's played except me.
Where did you get it on? Xbox?
Xbox, yeah.
I didn't know they put that game on Xbox.
Oh, yeah. I put it on Xbox. You know, a game's coming out in 2 weeks. It's going to be on Xbox for the first time as well, right? And it's Monster Hunter. And that I'm interested in because I keep on hearing all these things about it, so I want to experience it for myself.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
And also, it's coming out on PC afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've never played Okami. I want to see what the big deal is. Why everybody, you know what's interesting is when you play a game that everybody's raved about for years and years and years, and you finally get to play it and see why people raved about it. As a matter of fact, that's going to be the question of the week. What game did you play that was raved about, but you didn't get to play until, say, 5 or more years later? And then you figured out, and then you found out why people raved about it.
Hmm.
I'll give you the podcast to think about that one.
Okay.
So, anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. Switch outsells entire lifetime of Wii U in Japan, and this comes to us from Game Informer. Over in Japan, gaming magazine Famitsu has reported that the Switch has officially blown past Nintendo's previous console, the Wii U, in Japanese sales after less than a year on the market. According to Famitsu's sales tracking, the Switch has hit 3.4 million, which leapfrogs the Wii U's 3.3 million. It does not seem like a huge difference until you remember that the Wii U achieved that number over the span of 4 years, from December 8, 2012, to its discontinuation in January of 2017. On the one hand, the Wii U is sort of a sales failure, but the introduction of Splatoon did wonders for the system, especially in Japan. In 2016, Splatoon was the best-selling first-party new IP across Xbox One, PS4, and Wii U, which also explains why Nintendo is so eager to get Splatoon out for the Switch. And, spoiler warning, Splatoon 2 is just Splatoon. There's absolutely nothing different. It's just the Switch version of the first Splatoon. If it continues selling at this current pace, the Switch should outsell the PlayStation Vita and the PlayStation 4 in Japan this year. So, it doesn't mention American sales, but I'm pretty sure the story is the same here.
Oh, yeah, that thing has been sold out wherever anyone goes for quite a while. I mean, it's not hard to see why it outdid the Wii U. For one, the Switch has games. The Switch has games.
It had one game. It had the one game, which is what the Nintendo 64 had. So we have to remain cautious on the Switch's future, because the Nintendo 64 had Super Mario World, which destroyed everything, but then it turned out to be the only game. Now, what's encouraging is that a lot of indie developers...
So the N64, they didn't release any other games besides Mario World. Mario World was literally the only game on N64.
Oh, they had other games. I mean, they had the Super Star Wars games, for one.
Yeah, they had the Star Wars games. They had Ocarina of Time. They had the Majora's Mask. Turok.
What I'm saying is that the Switch has had, like... has been doing pretty consistent throughout. Was doing pretty consistently throughout 2017, and I mean, not just on re-releases, but on new games as well. And I will say,
the Wii sold gangbusters for the first 2 years. I'm not saying that the Switch is going to have the same arc as the Wii, But I will say that PC indie developers didn't really exist for any Nintendo console until 2017, and a lot of what the Switch is getting are a lot of indie titles, like The Binding of Isaac, which isn't exactly what you consider for a Switch, for a Nintendo console. The Binding of Isaac is kind of dark and depressing.
Right. There's also a lot of the Neo Geo catalog.
Well, the Neo Geo catalog's coming out for everybody. I look at the Xbox Live Marketplace, and I see these Neo Geo titles, and I always love going into the comments section, because then you hear the fans of the Neo Geo games going, yes, Samurai Showdown, woo, Metal Gear XX, yes.
See, but the most appealing thing about that is that, I mean, it's the portability.
I'm sorry.
It's Metal Slug.
Well, they also have Guilty Gear as well.
Guilty Gear is not on the Switch yet. It might someday.
I mean, Neo Geo. I'm talking about Neo Geo games.
Oh, Guilty Gear isn't Neo Geo. That was Arc System Works.
Oh, okay.
The people that are doing my favorite boyfriend. it's the portability. It's the fact that you can carry those games around along with you. Sure, no, sure, everybody, whatever, you can buy Skyrim again or Doom and they won't be as good, but you can carry them with you wherever you want to go, and for some people that matters. In fact, for a lot of people that matters. If you told me that I would be able to stuff a portable console that would be able to play Neo Geo games in their full glory in my backpack and carry it along with me wherever the hell I felt like going, that would have blown little TJ's mind.
That is a very good point, because you can't carry your computer anywhere you want to go if you want to play Skyrim.
You know, I'm just thinking, you know, in 2 weeks there's going to be Dragon Ball FighterZ. When you mentioned System Works, and I'm thinking, yeah, we're not going to hear from him for about a week.
Well, I'm just going to have the same game. You're going to ask me what I played this week, and I'm going to tell you the same thing over.
But the thing is that Monster Hunter is coming out the same day, but I doubt that's something that's a must-buy for you. There's also a day one edition of Dragon Ball FighterZ. I wonder if you care about that.
I don't know. I have friends that are getting Monster Hunter World, and they want me to come along for it. And for my new job, I'm actually kind of curious to get in there and see what I can pull from it for articles.
Well, you can always give the excuse, well, I'm waiting for the PC version a couple of months from now.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. I kind of want to get in there while it's hot and fresh.
So getting back to the Switch. Poor Scott. He still doesn't have a Switch.
No, I don't. But hopefully, if my tax return is good enough, I'll be able to afford one, and we'll get one.
No, you really have to look around online and see if they have the Zelda Switch bundle.
I think they sold out of that, or there might be one.
No, I mean, you don't need the official bundle. You just need to find someone who a brick and mortar that's offering the bundle. You know, get the Switch, get a free game, or something like that.
Okay.
You know what's good is that you're going to be past all that hardware malfunctioning. I don't think you're going to have to worry about the Switch bending into a pretzel like the launch ones.
That's what I'm hoping. That's one reason to wait so long, is to hopefully get second, third, whatever generation, where it's a much better construction and they've worked out all those kinks.
I was there on launch day for it, and I got mine, and I don't know. Maybe it's just that I'm super careful with my stuff, but I haven't had any issues.
Well, here's the thing. That's there are good people who still have their launch Xbox 360s that never had a red ring. So, you know,
I still have my launch Xbox 360.
I mean, I remember hearing people throw their Wiimotes into a TV screen. I just can't understand doing stuff like that. So I just,
for the original Wii, when people were flinging those things, they had to get a strap.
It's like I just don't understand. I think there are people that just really
children.
Don't understand. Well,
I know
understand
they're
how
not all children, but I know children tend
take
to
take care of their stuff.
Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, DJ.
Okay. The Tomb Kings brings crazy new units and crafting to Total War Warhammer 2. The Tomb Kings are coming to Total War Warhammer 2 this month. bringing with them some of the most exotic units in the entire Warhammer universe. In addition to hordes of traditional skeleton warriors, these powerful necromancers can control giant mechanical scorpions, war sphinx, and towering stone constructs that shoot lasers out of their eyes. In addition to special units, you can turn special resources into items, which you can then slot onto your generals to make them scarier in battle. You can claim resources by capturing settlements that have them, or you can trade with other factions. Tomb Kings may be skeletal nightmares, but they are rich skeletal nightmares. Someone out there in the Warhammer universe will be happy to swap you for some haunted jars for Someone out there in the Warhammer universe will be happy to swap you some haunted jars for a fortune. The great thing about skeleton warriors, apart from their big happy grins, is that they don't have any earthly desires for food, wages, or shelter. The Tomb Kings are such powerful necromancers that you get hordes of basic skeletons for nothing, and you don't have to pay upkeep. That means you'll always have a reliable lump of bodies with which to defend your kingdom. In battle, Tomb Kings can make use of the souls of the departed from their bodies. As stuff dies, your realm of souls bar fills up and passes several threshold points at the top of your screen. At each point, your general becomes a mass healing and resurrection. At each point, your general performs a mass healing and resurrection spell that brings your troops back into the fight. In its final stages, you can summon a unit of powerful Ushabti fighters anywhere in the battlefield. You always have access to hordes of basic skeletons, but you need expensive buildings to have access to even moderately powerful units, as mentioned before. Rise of the Tomb Kings is out on January 23rd.
So yeah, I gave up on Total War Warhammer a year ago, but you're still into it, aren't you, DJ?
It is neat.
Did you say neat or meat?
I said neat. It is cool.
Because you could say it is meat, and that still works out for this.
Well, there is a lot. It is a meat grinder. It's a grinder of bodies, and that's okay, too. Yeah, this sounds interesting, because, like, as far as, like, I think one of my favorite aspects of the Total War Warhammer series has been the different economies that each army uses.
Yeah, the humans are different than the dwarves, they're different than the elves, and completely different. Mm-hmm. And they all have their own goals, too. I mean, what was it, the dwarves just want to finish their book? Or something like that?
Yeah, their book of people they hate. But in Warhammer 2, they, like, upped the ante a bit. Like, the rat people, the Skaven,
yeah.
they literally eat the bodies of their enemies on the battlefield, and they keep whatever's left, and their entire economy thrives on food. And if you don't have enough food, then they'll overthrow you and attack each other.
You know, that reminds me, I did not know that Total War Warhammer Vermintide 2 was coming, which is going to be adding Chaos troops, and so that's why they gave it away for free last month. And I liked Vermintide, but it was a pain starting my characters back up on a console. So it's like I'm going to wait for Vermintide 2 before I start up again.
Yeah. And, I mean, Vermintide 1 was good, but it also had some issues. So I'm hoping that those will all be smoothed out by Vermintide 2, and I can just jump in and enjoy it.
You know, I'm finding out that Overkill's The Walking Dead game is basically left for Walking Dead. Like, we're having a lot of these guess what, that actually goes right into our next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay.
Speaking of undead,
State of Decay 2 is still on for a spring release. This is from Destructoid. Along with Sea of Thieves, State of Decay 2 is one of the cooperative games that are coming this year for Microsoft's console. Undead Labs and Microsoft Studios have been fairly quiet about the zombie survival game, but it seems to be making steady progress all the same. Today, the ESRB states State of Decay 2... okay, I guess something's missing there. They rated State of Decay 2, I guess, mature. Following the roundabout status update on the game's production, Undead Labs also confirmed that while it still can't commit to a release date, the developers are confident for a spring release.
Well, here's part of the ESRB description. Players use baseball bats, meat cleavers, machetes, grenades, and machine guns to kill zombies in frenetic melee-style combat. Several weapons allow for players to crush and maim zombie heads. Grenade blasts also depict blood and dismemberment. If other human survivors become infected or ill, players can choose to euthanize them by shooting them in the head at close range, resulting in decapitation and a large blood splatter effects. You could also craft painkillers and opiates. And there's also a lot of bad language, too. So, yeah, here's my State of Decay was basically Tamagotchi with zombies. That was my main complaint, because I would go away for a day, come back, my colony would be overrun with zombies. And here's the thing about that game. It's permadeath. Once characters die, they die. That's it. You can't have them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were talking about, like, in the previous game,
they got depressed in that game. And when your survivors started getting depressed, it's like this war of mine. It's like, oh dear, I'm gonna have problems that have nothing to do with zombies. Great.
I was going to say a world that keeps going after you stop playing.
Oh, yeah, it keeps going. It's Tamagotchi.
Even after you turn the game off, there's some sort of... Was it an online always game, or was it tracked how long you were away?
It knew how long you were away. I think it used the system clock for that.
Which is... I mean, you could totally fudge that by messing with your system clock, but at the same time... Like, I understand people's worry about State of Decay 2, because they're definitely going to be going for more of a persistent online world in that one.
Well, and now the thing that impresses me about State of Decay 2 is that they're upping the number of traits that your survivors can have to something like 1,000 types of traits, which is just mental. So on the one hand, you have all these characters that are going to be in the meat grinder and that you have to care for, because guess what? You better get those colony defenses up right quick, and you better get your food, because, you know, things can go bad in a hurry and they may not even involve zombies. But on the other hand, you know, all these characters are living, even in the first game, everybody felt different. You know, they felt like their own individuals.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to play through with that many traits, and it will at the very least be interesting to play through it several times, or play through with several different types of characters and see what happens each time.
I would like the same game, except it's first person instead of isometric action.
Yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I'm once bitten, twice shy about this game. So we'll see. Maybe I'll start playing State of Decay again, because I do have the Game of the Year edition, I believe it's called. And I'll see if I can stand it for a couple of minutes before I slam down my controller in frustration, because I come back, all my people are eating themselves or some weird thing like that. Or, oh, all of your defenses are down and here comes a zombie rush. Are you prepared? Oh, look, she's depressed, so she's not going to fight. I own this this War of Mine, because it was like $2. I played it for like 30 minutes, and I stopped playing it. I'll play a game like Papers, Please, but this War of Mine, just too much.
Yeah, I mean, it is literally meant to depress you with the horrible realities of war.
And also, you know, the controls aren't like, you know, the controls in this War of Mine are kind of wonky. It just, you know, I wish there was more of a tutorial mode in which it went step by step by step by step by step a little bit better. Because I think they just dump you on. There are certain things that you do. I don't quite understand what it's doing for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, you make a bed, but then you got to do this and that, and it's like, what? How do I get things warm? I mean, you know, it's. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Rebellion by Studio Radiant Worlds, and this comes to us from Rock Paper Shotgun. Rebellion, the makers of Sniper Elite, not to mention owners of the comic 2000 AD, have expanded their business portfolio once more. It's bound in black leather and red contrast stitching, has a built-in pen holder and a cartridge pouch, and yes, they've bought Radiant Worlds. The studio may not seem familiar, as they've only worked on the Infinite game Sky Saga Infinite Isles. Radiant Worlds announced Sky Saga in November 2014 and did soon let its player into an invitation-only alpha, but in August 2017, shortly before the open beta launch, the publisher Smilegate put the game on indefinite hold. Since that was Radiant's only game, they've been sort of in a sticky situation. While they haven't brought Sky Saga with them, they're at least safe for now. Rebellion announced today that they've snapped up Radiant Worlds, quote, for an undisclosed sum, and welcomed the studio and its 70 members, Oliver, the brothers Oliver included, who are the founders of the studio. They're now called Rebellion Warwick. Radiant is now helping with games Rebellion already has on the go, such as the cooperative pulp-em-up shooter Strange Brigade. Oh god, Strange Brigade is indeed strange. We saw it at E3, remember? And it was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was...
It's a survival horror game, but it's also a puzzle game at the same time. It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think you were fighting... it's weird. You're not fighting zombies. You're fighting... They're not Aztec. They're Egyptian mummies. Well, Egyptian warriors, undead warriors. They're not mummies. Although I do believe a mummy does come up. It's a comedy as well. It's in the vein of The Evil Dead. So you have that kind of wisecracking in it. And yeah. I'll tell you, it was really fun. You played it at E3, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it was all over the place. Was it Microsoft's booth? I think it was also at PlayStation's booth, too. I'm not sure. And they had their own booth. So you couldn't swing a dead cat without that game. Now,
it was at the very least. It was at the very least very unique compared to a lot of stuff I'd seen.
So Sky Saga was basically a Minecraft MMO. And it's not that other one, which was a big scam. This one was different. But when you have a game that's in alpha for 3 years, now, how long was Minecraft in alpha?
I think at least since 2009. So about almost 3 years.
Oh, okay. So it isn't entirely strange, but the difference between that is Mojang was completely independent. They didn't have a publisher.
Right.
So yeah.
Now they do.
People had good things to say about Sky Saga, if I recall. Or at least they liked it, and then it was sort of became a, when is this coming out? When is this coming out? When is this coming out? Do you know anything about Sky Saga, TJ?
I don't know. I haven't heard of this one before.
Well, it's Minecraft. Except
right.
It's an MMO.
Right. Which, on one hand, sounds neat, and on another hand, sounds terrible.
Yeah. I mean, if you go to the Sky Saga's official page, it has a dear dedicated fans of Sky Saga. Smilegate apologizes for any confusion caused by recent events. The development of Sky Saga has been put on hold for now. So, it could continue... But if it does, I don't think it could go with the former developer if they're now working with someone else.
Hmm.
Now, the only thing that bothers me is that they're not really being told to make their own game. It's more like, okay, we have more people to work on this other game.
Yeah.
That sounds like a shame.
And I mean, like, Rebellion has been doing good things with the properties that they've been buying. Their re-release in HD edition of Battlezone 20. Let's see, Battlezone Redux. Battlezone 98 Redux.
That was the update to the old arcade game.
And then they did a redo of, oh my gosh,
I remember playing the redo of Combat, the 2600 game that was made into a 3D tank game.
I guess it was a shame though when a company gets bought out by another company and then they have to change direction on projects that they were working on.
But here's the thing, you know, they only had one project and it was owned by someone else, so it's sort of like, okay, we just need more manpower. That's the part that depresses me. It's like, yeah, we need more bodies. We need more more meat for the grinder.
Yeah.
Oh, they did a... Well, they did Battlezone 98, but they also did... They're doing Evil Genius 2.
Oh, God, that thing has been... Evil Genius 2 has been... Well, there was the Evil Genius MMO, which was canceled. But Evil Genius 2 has been... It's been vaporware for a while now. I don't know what's going on with that. You want to talk about Metal Gear Survive? It's coming out in a month, and it's like, oh, wait, what? It's the one without Kojima.
Yeah. That is a shame. Rogue Trooper. Rogue Trooper is the thing that Rebellion did.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
they didn't do it, but they brought it back. And so, like, I don't know. I like Rebellion. I like what they've been doing. They're sort of like... They're sort of like Night Dive Studios, but like not as high quality, I would say. Night Dive really like pushes things to the next level as far as what their reboots have been. Rebellion sort of brings those things to get those old games that people like sort of liked, so like sort of the cult classics together, and makes them playable again. Which
how can you not mention Aliens versus Predator?
Yeah. That's one of them. But I was thinking of the ones that I've played, and I was trying to get to Rogue Trooper because it was like a middle of the road shooter, but it wasn't bad at all.
Well, see, keep in mind that Rebellion started out as just one of those companies that just makes licensing for those cheap licensed games. Mm-hmm. That they'll be the ones who make. Oh yeah, they're doing Mission Impossible for the Game Boy Color. And they also do the ports. I mean, they're responsible for the port of Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six for the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
For the original PlayStation. So you can imagine what a mess that game was.
Yeah. And I'm not saying they hit a home run every time.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, you know. I mean, they're, you remember the game Gun that was on the Xbox? You know,
yes.
Sort of like, they're the ones who had to make the portable version of that for the PSP.
All I can say is that the games that I've played in the last maybe 3 years that have had the Rebellion seal on them, pretty enjoyable, pretty good times.
Now, granted, Sniper Elite?
A little bit.
Okay, because that's their main hat, you know, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can only kill Hitler so many times, right? But at the same time. They've done a pretty good job with that series, if I remember right.
Yeah. So anyways, getting back to the question of the week, what game did you hear about for a long time and you didn't get to play until much later? That was really good. Not games that are really bad. So I don't want to hear, well, I bought Daikatana just to see how bad it really was.
I guess for me it would be Dishonored. It was a long time after its release. In fact, second game was coming out by the time I even played it once, so I that'll be my pick. I enjoyed it. It's a very difficult, or I mean, like, it's difficult to be in stealth mode, and then it's like,
that bothers
if you screw
me
up,
is that there's one thing hacking. In which you have to hide somebody from something,
yeah,
but you never get credit for it, and you say, what am I doing wrong? And it never tells you what you're doing wrong. And I say, oh, well, he died. What? But I stuffed him inside that thing. How'd they find him? You know, it's like... So After that, I just said, screw it, and I went into murder mode. And I killed everybody, even people I didn't need to kill, because I didn't want any witnesses. I wanted the entire town to be dead. which, you know, that made the rats go come back in force, you know, because the more you become evil murderer man, the more rats there are in that game.
Yeah.
On one mission, I was doing it stealth, and I was actually doing this on stream, and I was having an okay run at the stealth factor, but then somebody caught me, and I got really upset about it because it was a really bad. It was like a stupid thing that happened, and so I chopped that man's head off, and I threw it out, and it was in this giant mansion, and I was on the second story, so I ran to the window and chucked his head out into the courtyard, and. It just plopped on the ground like a pumpkin thrown from a second story window. Mm. But I'm well adjusted, I promise.
So what game was it for you though?
For me, it has to be a game I picked up after a while that I liked. I was gonna say, because if it can be one that I didn't like, it was Ocarina of Time.
Oh. I can see why.
Specifically,
I love Scott's gasp there.
actually, Ocarina of Time wasn't so bad. Majora's Mask I hated.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem, though. You said, how long after they were released did you play them?
I played them on the 3DS as their HD remix.
Right. So here's the problem. Every single Zelda game for a very long time copied those games. And it's sort of like the Seinfeld effect, you know?
But
they didn't do it as well as the ones coming down the road.
It's not that, because I love Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and Seasons, and I played through those on my 3DS, and I beat them again, and I really enjoyed those. What it was is that Majora's Mask has no respect for your time if you don't know exactly what you're doing. I got to the water dungeon, and it takes a good amount of time to finish that dungeon, and if you don't do everything right, you have to go back to the first day and do a whole bunch of stuff that you already did again, because time sucks. Time travel as a mechanism when it comes to solving dungeons sucks. It just made me really frustrated to a certain point where I'm just like, I have better things to do and funner things to do that don't involve doing this. So as much as I understand everybody's like, oh, it's Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. How could you not like it? It's so iconic. I'm just like, yeah, but it doesn't respect me, and so I don't respect it.
I have to agree with you, TJ. I didn't really like the idea of bouncing around time as a mechanic for the game. It just didn't really interest me, so I didn't really play that one. But I did like Twilight.
In Ocarina of Time, it's fine because nothing goes back. You don't have to go back if you mess something up. Everything stays consistent on whatever track you're on, whether you're in the past or in the future. In Majora's Mask, it resets everything, and you have to do a whole bunch of stuff you already did, and it's annoying.
Okay, but what about a game you like, damn it?
A game that I didn't pick up after a long time that I really enjoyed would have been Dark Souls 2.
Okay.
Well, I guess that's another one I could pick.
I got Dark Souls 2 as a primer for Dark Souls 3 because I knew I was going to be reviewing Dark Souls 3. And I had a good time with it. I had finished Bloodborne by this point, and I'd never played Dark Souls 2, and I'd never played a Dark Souls game besides that little bit of the Demon Souls game I played. So I got into it, I made my character, I had some fun, and then I learned to hate myself all over again in Dark Souls 3.
Okay, for me, Zork. Now, that game first came out in 1977, and I first played it in 1987. So, and it was, you know, I enjoyed it. And, you know, I finally found out what the hell people were talking about when they talked about Grooves. Now, I actually had an example of that recently. If you remember, I played Tales from Tales from Borderlands. And as soon as I mentioned I was playing it, DJ there said, "Oh, did you get to that part?" I said, "Yeah, yeah, I did." And I didn't even know it was a thing until afterward, you know, until TJ mentioned it. I said, "What was it really that? Oh, well, people really went on about it. It was like a Portal-like meme."
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say, for those who haven't played it, even though, you know, I'll just say finger guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's that guy. And by the way, the character's voice, well, for doing it, I mean, spoiler, he gets killed, or at least you think he's dead, or something like that. It's Patrick Warburton, which makes it even better.
He pulls a fake pin out of a fake grenade on a guy's fake grenade vest, and that guy fake explodes.
And the funniest part is that there's a janitor there, and there's two other people there who are just watching this like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
They take this very seriously.
Oh, yeah. It is easily one of the best sequences in modern video games.
And it has nothing to do with anything in the rest of the game. It's just, I haven't seen the movie yet. But from my understanding, it's like that scene from the Anchorman, you know, where the punchline is, "Well, that isolated fast."
Oh yeah,
I think, you know what, I'm willing to bet you that scene from the Anchorman is directly responsible for that scene in the game. I'm willing to bet you that was the inspiration.
I wouldn't doubt it in the least.
Now this one isn't too long. It was like maybe I think it was a year after it was released. But the first Civilization, I met this guy, and, you know, he was saying, "Oh, man, what's it called? I have to play Civilization." You know, I was in his apartment. I said, what? It's like, yeah, it's an addiction. I can't help myself. So I decided, you know what? And this is like a year and a half after it was released. And it's sort of like, well, geez, maybe I should buy a copy. So I did buy a copy, and I said, oh, yeah. Now I see why everybody's massively addicted to Civilization. We're talking about the first Civilization, folks.
Mm-hmm. I remember playing that as well. My friend introduced me to it, and I got addicted to it very quickly.
And it's sort of very like, people are saying this is addictive. Why? Oh, that's why. Because here's the thing, you know, I don't know, but Civilization may have been the first 4X game.
I think so.
I do believe so. I actually did an article on this recently, and I did some research on that, and yes, I do believe that it was one of, if not the very, very first ones, because it came out in like 1989. No, 1990.
1991.
I still have
the original box.
Wow.
I keep other stuff in it. Oh, actually, I do have the 5 1/4 inch flop, not the 3 1/2 inch floppies in it. But yeah, I have the original box, and for those who don't know what the original box looks like, it's an Egyptian monument. I don't know if it's or is it a Roman? No, it's an Egyptian monument because the box is yellow, and I think it says Sid Meier's Civilization, and then it has something like build an empire to last the test of time or something like that on it.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at the box directly.
It has that big old businessy MicroProse logo on the bottom of it.
And you know what box I have in the inside it, which fits it perfectly? The box of Civilization 2.
MicroProse's logo is hilarious to me because it just like it strikes me as this stuffy man kicking in your door. He walks in with a briefcase, adjusts his tie, and says, "We are now going to play video games."
By the way, Civilization 2 was the first game I ever pre-ordered. And it's a good thing, too, because when I went to the thing to pick up my pre-order, they was like, "Yeah, good luck with that." So, no, do I have a pre-order? Oh, okay. So it's sort of like, yeah, try buying. You could not buy Civilization 2 on first for a very long while. Those things got snapped up extremely quickly. It was the Diablo 2 of its day.
Well, I remember getting it pretty easily.
Well, this was in New York, so I don't know. Maybe they had a couple where you live. I was also very, very heavy because, you know, that had that big, thick manual. It was a textbook.
Oh, yeah. It was, I remember. I missed those days of having big, thick game manuals.
Yeah. Anyways, we do have some listener feedback. And this is from Arvid. No mention of Prey in your best games of 2017? I didn't notice you mentioning it. I don't think we did mention Prey.
Prey was one that I didn't get to, even though I have nothing but respect for the game and for its... I mean, it's the same people who made Dishonored.
From what I understand, it's basically System Shock.
It is a little bit, but it's got a lot going on in it. It's got Dishonored levels of intrigue and craziness going on as far as the game goes, and also that sort of bizarre sci-fi style that Dishonored and Prey have. Arcane is good at that. Arcane is good at building that environment, building interesting creatures and interesting stories. I didn't get to that game, and there's a very distinct reason that I didn't. I told Samantha about that, my wife, and generally we decide on games we're going to play through together when it's a big, long game. I was like, hey, guess what? These guys made Dishonored. And she's like, oh, cool, show me. And she looked at it and was like, I don't... And after we were done watching the trailer, she was like, I don't like it.
Okay.
And
I'll have to take that for the people who made the trailer. Say, you know, you misrepresented the game with your trailer.
Well, she was like, I don't know. It's just like, it strikes me in the same way that, like... It hurt her in a way that Dead Space and Alien Isolation did, which she is terrified of Alien Isolation. So,
I still have Alien Isolation on my Steam thing downloaded. I still haven't played it yet.
Oh, it's a good horror game.
There we go. Another game that I'm going to be playing long after the acclaim has come out, so we'll see if I like it.
It's a very, very, very good horror game. It's not a very good...
I know what it is. I know exactly what's going on in it. I just still haven't played it. That's all.
Uh-huh. But yeah, so,
I had for 4 years before I actually started playing it.
But Prey is one of those games I'll get to eventually, if only on my own, or maybe I'll trick Samantha into sitting down and playing it with me.
Good luck.
From the jump start, she was very much anti Prey, so that one got nixed off our list.
So. Before we stop, I'm going to mention I've been playing the Railway Empire beta. And basically, they're trying to do Railroad Tycoon, which is one of my favorite games of all time. The only issue I have with it is the is the interface and how you do stuff. And they could have done it better. But in the meantime, I'm going to see how it goes. You know, like I said, I would just love a Railroad Tycoon with updated graphics without changing one thing about the controls or the layouts or the gameplay. Just update the graphics. I don't care. Or at least let it be able to be run on Windows 10. Because that is a game I could play for 20 years. I had played for 20 years, actually. So long as my computer could run it.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially another Tycoon game, isn't it?
It's the first Tycoon game. This is the reason why you have Tycoon on the end of all these games. It's because of Railroad Tycoon.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Tycoon game. And what's funny is that it gave birth indirectly to the theme park game. You know, like, which later became stuff like Zoo Tycoon and Theme Zoo and all that stuff. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And that, remember, the question of the week is, what game did you play long after it had its run that you heard was good, and when you finally got to play it, you know, just to see what all the fuss was about. Oh, you know what? Actually, I have the perfect example of that. Tony Hawk. I didn't play any Tony Hawk game until Tony Hawk 2X on the original Xbox. And I enjoyed it enough that I was able to get that made me want to give Jet Set Radio Future a chance.
Yeah, that's one that I never got to either. I wouldn't mind trying that someday.
Try Tony Hawk 5. You know, the game that was released half buggy and half made and completely disastrous without any help from Tony Hawk.
It looks like one of those games that would have fun for about 5-10 minutes, then
what,
be
the
done.
What, the original and Tony Hawk or Tony Hawk
5? Down and never get up.
Well, see, the original Tony Hawk, it was just making those combos and doing all those things, you know. And a lot of games took it their cues from it, like SSX and Skate and all these other games, in which basically you're just trying to do the best combos you could.
Yeah, and then I would get tired of it and put it down and never pick it up again.
Yeah, but you see, you had all these parks and all these things to do and all these tasks to do. Spell S-K-A-T-E. He's not getting it. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care. Have fun. Play games, y'all.